This is James Sandy for 93.7 Express FM, and I'm very pleased to be joined now by comedian Simon Day, who we all know and love from The Fast Show, as well as a whole host of other things. Simon, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Hello to you and all your listeners.
Thank you. And you're broadcasting from, I believe, a little hold-up somewhere in London.
Yeah, I'm in NW2 in Wilston.
It's the place to be. You're a North Wheezy, I think that's what they call them, isn't it?
North Wheezy.
I think that's what they call them. I think that's what Tim Westwood would call people from that area anyway.
Of course he would.
But you're coming to Portsmouth on Saturday, 3rd of November. You're bringing your show Comedy and Error to the new Theatre Royal here in the city, which we're all excited about. Just start by telling us a little bit about the show.
Well, the show is essentially, it's based around my book, really, which is an autobiography I've written about my sort of life, which is quite interesting, prior to becoming famous. And basically, I do a bit of stand-up, and then I'll be reading from my book, various readings, and then a bit of sort of Q&A answer session.
So it's a bit of a cultural mix in terms of format.
No, exactly, yeah. I mean, I've just been doing stand-up, and I can do characters as well, but this will be more based around the book, and I think it's good, because I think the book's really great, you know, and the more publicity it gets, the better, you know. I should have called it 50 Shades of Day. Maybe it would have sold more copies.
So let's talk about the book. The book is Comedy and Error. They Really Were Marvellous Times, and obviously I think we know where that subtitle comes from.
Yeah.
As you said, it's based on your life and your life history to date. Various reviews that I've read have said it's a very honest account. It's very candid. One of the things I did prior to talking to you was I looked at one of your YouTube clips, and I'd urge listeners to go and have a look on YouTube at some of the things Simon's got up there. And there's a very open and quite, I think, quite personal account of, well, there's a bedwetting incident on there, which is not something that celebrities go into.
I mean, the bedwetting is not something that really brings back any sort of sad memories. It's so long ago, but I deal, you know, I'm an addict, so there's a lot of stuff in there about drinking problems and drug problems, bedwetting. I was in Borstal because I used to steal to play fruit machines. That was one of my addictions when I was about 19. I was homeless at the time, and my parents had broken up. So there's quite a lot of stuff. And I read a lot of comics biographies. They kind of really glossed over stuff. It was all like, hey, yeah, everything's really great and, you know, everything's wonderful. And
are they very often ghost-written?
A lot of them are ghost-written, yeah. I mean, that's just something I just couldn't... I just think it's the strangest thing in the world, isn't it, to get someone else to write your own book. But, yeah, this is a no-holds-barred sort of... I wanted to tell the story of what it's like to be a comedian, really. Because I think comedians are pretty sort of damaged people in general. And it's sort of, it's about what makes a comedian, you know, what the different experiences that happen that sort of make a comedian, really.
So it covers, I think it's fair to say you had a fairly kind of rocky start. Was that you were a bad lad, or you were just misguided or misunderstood, or what's the nub of it?
Well, it's addiction problems, really. You know, my parents broke up, and I used to sort of steal, play fruit machines. I was addicted to fruit machines. I played them incessantly.
So gambling and inevitably alcohol and drugs strayed into
that
it at
came
some stage.
Later, the alcohol and drugs. I would have started earlier, but I'd spent my money on fruit machines.
Yeah. So really, it's a kind of sin and redemption story. And I was thinking that you're kind of comedy's Johnny Cash, aren't you?
That'll do for me, yeah.
We could put that on the poster, maybe.
Comedy Johnny Cash, yeah.
So when you were writing about all of your experiences, was that in itself, was that a kind of haunting experience, or was it kind of catharsis?
Sometimes you'd sort of go to bed and you'd be writing something about, you know, that happened with your parents or your dad, and you'd be like, oh, God, you know, actually, that was quite heavy, you know, because you've got to try and make it funny. So obviously it's not completely, well, woe is me, and, you know, it was awful, and then, you know, I went to sleep. It's written from a point of view of it being funny, and it's kind of me against the world up until... Which is why there's a lot more of my life before I became successful, because kind of writing about success is pretty boring, really.
And do you think success, you know, is also something that people get addicted to and kind of has a negative effect as well, you know, as those other kind of things you mentioned?
I think it's nice to be treated differently and to get all the trappings of success and stuff like that. I think it's an unreal world. I think a lot of people in my industry get addicted to, you know, the fact that they're treated better than they would be by normal people, you know, because everyone just agrees with you and says, oh, you look great in makeup, oh, do you want a cup of coffee, and oh, really, and then the long as you do your work, or you're pandered to, your every need is pandered to.
You mentioned makeup, and then as soon as you said that, what entered my mind was a long time ago, I think you appeared on Stars in Their Eyes as Boy George.
Yes.
And that was a heavily made-up experience.
It was, my God, yeah. I mean, I wish I had a bit...
You were very good, I have to say. You were very good.
Thank you. I wish I had that on DVD, but I haven't, sadly. But I'd love to see that again.
Well, I'm sure someone listening might be able to dig it out.
If anyone is, send it in, please.
Your kind of big break, I suppose, or your kind of your stroke of luck, as it were, was I think you were working in a shop that sells fireplaces, and you kind of spotted by Vic and Bob when you were in a talent show around that kind of time.
Yeah, a friend of mine had a fireplace shop, and they used to write above it. They had a little office above it, and he got to know them, and he just I was kind of 29. I didn't really have a job or any prospects. He was like, "Why don't you write a stand-up set? You know, it's all the alternative comedy is all the rage, you know." We wrote this set, and I did a talent night, and they were judging, and they sort of loved it and said, "You can come on tour with us." So I sort of went straight on tour with them, which was amazing.
Excellent. And I can imagine that was a real kind of strange and quite wonderful experience. I know certainly in the early days, Vic and Bob had kind of very heavily improvised, almost nightly shows.
Yeah, strange and wonderful is a good way of describing it, and that there was a lot of ad-libbing stuff. And it was just, to be doing it for me was, having been the landscape gardener such before that, it was incredible to be actually doing something and being paid for messing about, really.
It's quite a shift. And obviously, you know, they're known really for kind of, I suppose, character-based comedy to an extent, but kind of quite surreal character-based comedy.
Yes.
You're known, I think, for, I suppose, three big characters. You've got competitive dad,
yeah,
who I've certainly seen a number of examples of throughout my life. The great Tommy Cockles, star of Music Hall and critic of the kind of vaudeville. And Dave Angel, eco-warrior, who's often seen his underpants, I think, dancing along to Moonlight Shadow or something,
right,
isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. Just to give people a picture of those kind of things. And I'm interested in some of the strong characters in your life. You're quoted, I think quite touchingly, saying that your wife saved you from self-destruction.
Well, she helped. You know, I'd come to the point where I was really bored of it all, but I think having someone around who kind of wasn't prepared to part with you, you know, your behaviour, that's when you start to sort of take a look at yourself. And I started going to AA and NA and stuff like that, and that helped me straighten up. And certainly when the kids came along, that was it, you know, because you cannot be a functioning sort of drunk or whatever when you've got children.
Yeah, it kind of takes on a whole new level of seriousness, doesn't it, I think?
Exactly.
So I'm interested, some of the characters that you've met along your journey, which has been, there's been a few swerves, let's just say that, have elements of some of those people made it into some of the characters that you're famous for or some of the film roles that you've taken on?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, characters are basically, they're normally based on someone you've seen and you think, God, I can give him a twist or whatever. I mean, Dave Angel was kind of Mike Read. I used to love the Mike Read, and I read his biography, which is almost like Tommy Cockles in places, and just so odd. He worked at a warehouse when he was a kid, and there was this rat problem, and he said to the bloke, "Don't worry, I'll sort it out. You know, I'll get rid of the rat." The bite through their necks, apparently. He just threw them on a pile. I just thought, it's a lovely story. So that was kind of, I had the Mike Read kind of, what would Mike Read really not care about? And I thought, you know, the environment. No disrespect to Mike Read, he's dead now anyway. But you know, I thought to juxtapose the whole thing of him being an eco-warrior and being a sort of Essex man.
And we should just say, obviously, this is the Mike Read of Runaround and EastEnders fame, not the classic FM stroke Radio
no.
1 former DJ. We should make that very clear, shouldn't we?
Okay,
I'm always interested in, when I talk to actors and comedians, I'm always interested in the kind of the process of writing. And you said earlier that, you know, obviously the comedian's function is to be comedic and, you know, to kind of make people laugh. Ultimately,
yeah,
that's what it breaks down to. In terms of some of the, you know, you've done TV, you've done radio, you've done some things recently, I think, for the kind of internet-based.
Yeah.
But you've always been a writer. You've always been writing different things. How do you think that those different medias kind of influence the comedy? You know, what kind of constraints do they apply or sort of...
Well, radio's good. I've just done two radio shows to Radio 4, and what was great about that was that no one really interfered because it costs so much less money to make the programmes. You don't have a vast amount of people wandering in and putting their two penalty in and saying, "We can't do that and we can't do this, and why don't you try doing that?" They just let you get on with it. And I found that very freeing. Telly, there are a lot more. There's a lot more people involved trying to sort of stick their oar in, you know, who don't actually have you know, a job title at the BBC, but they tend to want to sort of put their opinion over. But writing is writing, you know. You get on and do it. Sometimes I do it on my own, sometimes with other people, you know. But it's very enjoyable.
It involves a whole bigger entourage, I guess, once you get into a TV studio,
yeah,
or writing, you know, sort of production room. I'm also interested in some of your influences, and when I look at some of your work, I can see elements, or I can hear elements of Tony Hancock, and I can,
yeah,
also, you know, you've got that kind of self-deprecation, that wonderfully British kind of amusing self-deprecation. But there's also, I think it's fair to say, a good dollop of lunacy involved in some of your work. And that tradition, I think, links back to people like the Goons and Round the Horn and those kind of radio shows.
Yeah, I'd say the Goons were just too young for me, you know, and I kind of got it, but I much prefer Monty Python. I think all our generation were Monty Python nuts, you know, and I also like Pete and Doug. And I think Tommy Cockles, I didn't know this, and the other day I was watching Pete and Doug, and I suddenly realised that's where I got it from, that kind of... that strange, the sort of normal voice, and suddenly going, there he was, standing there, there she was, you know, whatever. But it's that same thing of a not very normal environment and putting something totally surreal in, which is what Tommy Cockles is. So certainly all of those things. But I think we were lucky growing up in the 70s where you turn the telly on at night and there was always something amazing on, you know, whether it was Dad's Army or Porridge or, you know, or Monty Python, or we were just spoiled, you know.
And what do you think the great Tommy Cockles would make of your current stage show? Do you think he'd approve?
He'd say no.
Funny enough,
I just did my radio show, and I did. Tommy's written his memoirs, and he's very anti any sort of personal detail. It's a lot more to do with, you know, sort of being positive and up. And he doesn't, you know, the reason he's writing his memoirs is that someone else is writing an unsolicited one, which he's worried will have all, you know, as Tommy says, you know, he's accused of being a member of the Nazi Party and the Communist Party, which is ridiculous but true.
You think it might be a bit too contemporary for Tommy?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he'd like it.
Okay, last question I'm keen to ask you. When you're doing your kind of question and answer sessions at the end of your turn, as it were, what's the worst question someone's asked you so far?
They've all been very nice. They're all such nice people. Anyone who's that bothered to ask a question. I did have a woman came up with her daughter and said, afterwards when I was signing a book, and she pointed at her daughter and went, "She still wets the bed."
Simon Day, Comedy in Error, is on at the New Theatre Royal Portsmouth on Saturday the 3rd of November at 8 o'clock. You can get tickets from the box office on 023 9264 9000 or check out their website, newtheatreroyal.com. And Simon, thanks very much for talking to us. Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, thanks.
Bye.